This is Genoa.
And this is Yusuf.
And this is
F-Life Entertainment. The last August. What? So tell the people out podcast land what we're doing this month.
So the month of August, we are diving into movies that have the word last in the title.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've run out of new movies to review because there aren't that many out there right now. And so we thought we would just focus on doing a full month of throwbacks, all movies that have the word last. So like The Last Dragon, Last Action Hero, Last of the Mohicans, Last Boy Scout, Last Fill in the Blank.
Yeah. So we're not going to give it to them all at once, you know. Yeah, got to leave them in suspense on our last. But today.
Yeah, we are starting with. We did Arnold Schwarzenegger on Thursday, so we figured we would just start Thursday off with another Schwarzenegger film, and we are doing The Last Action Hero, which sort of makes fun of himself in the movie, so it felt like a nice place to start.
Yeah, totally. So Last Action Hero, which was released June 18th in America, 1993. In 1993, top five shows we were watching. So I go from five to one. Grace Under Fire. I remember that show. Grace Under Fire. Four was Roseanne. Three, Seinfeld. Two, Home Improvement. One, 60 Minutes. And the top song of 93, and I thought this came out like 95, was That's the Way Love Goes, Janet Jackson. That was a good like kind of laid back type track. That was a good one.
Yeah. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at the cast list on IMDb, and why don't they have the name of the little boy in the cast?
It's not IMDb.
Oh, he's way down in the bottom. Austin O'Brien.
Yeah, this is his first movie. It's credited introducing Austin O'Brien. Yeah.
It was obvious it was his first film.
Right. So if you are introducing, like, if it's an introducing, I think you're like bottom of the credit hierarchy.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Because, like, you haven't proven yourself yet. Like, you aren't supposed to be built next to, you know, the big star.
Right. And so the big stars are Arnold Schwarzenegger and F. Murray Abraham.
Mm hmm.
And F. Murray got the job because Alan Rickman was too expensive. So we got Academy Award winning actor F. Murray Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's not forget Charles Dance, right? It was Charles Dance, like, because they asked Alan Rickman to play the character, right. Charles Dance.
Yeah.
And on set, I think the first day on set, Charles Dance wore a shirt saying, "I'm cheaper than Alan Rickman," which is pretty awesome.
Which is, yeah. I mean, you got to embrace it.
Yeah, you know, why not? Now, this film was directed by John McTiernan. John McTiernan, he gave us awesome 80s action in the form of Predator, the first Predator. Now, this is the director, Arnold Schwarzenegger's second film, if I'm not mistaken, because Predator was the first movie they joined up on.
Right. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, he he got to pick who directed it and who starred in this and everything. He was, I think, an executive producer or something. So he had final say on the director. So he did bring in John McTiernan or have final say in him being the person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's like, hey, it worked so well, you know, with in Predator, why not? You know, like, you know.
Right. But we know him, the director, mostly for the Christmas movie,
Die Hard. Yes. The Christmas movie of all Christmas movies. Yes. He did Die Hard 1 and 3. And he also did Hunt for Red October in 1990. So, he gave us some good movies. He gave us some really good, you know, action movies.
Off of his list of movies, I've seen all of them. No big surprise there. 13 or not, the rollerball one might be the worst one on his list.
Yeah. I don't know what he was thinking on that one.
I mean, the script and the casting, it's just the acting. I mean,
yeah,
guys, don't go watch Rollerball is what we're saying.
Yeah,
you can skip that.
Please skip that. And his filmography, definitely, like, avoid that like the plague. In this particular film, okay, so just to give a little context, now this came out in 1993, summer 1993. Now, the same year, this small independent film that no one really knew about, it was called Jurassic Park, basically. So Jurassic Park came out in 1993, I think late May of 1993, and pretty much dominated 1993, the summer. So pretty much everything else fell by the wayside. And Last Action Hero was released, I think, maybe 2 weeks after Jurassic Park. So that hurt their returns a lot. And I would say, and they were saying a lot of people were to blame, but of course it was Sony Columbia that distributed the film, because they knew Jurassic Park was dropping, but instead of pushing Last Action back or moving it forward, they figured, hey, Arnold Schwarzenegger is big enough to take on this little small director called Steven Spielberg. No, we can do it.
Right, but, well, they couldn't have moved it up earlier because they were still shooting scenes a week before it was released. Right. So yes, they should have waited a month until after Jurassic Park. I mean, even if you don't believe in, think a dinosaur movie is going to do well, I mean, just because of who's attached to it, you would think that it would blow everyone else out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like you're going up against the king of, like, summer movies, Steven Spielberg. Like, yeah, that was very ballsy and very, you know, ill-advised on their end. This could have been a good, actually, they should have dropped this fall. This could have been a good Christmas movie. They could have dropped this in December.
Or a good Thanksgiving movie. Yeah.
But no, there's like, hey, we got Arnold. Arnold is like the big summer draw. You know, because of the success of Terminator 2, you know, they're like, hey, you know, he's going to do it again. And nothing's going to stop Last Action Hero. Well, but.
But the dinosaurs did.
Yes. So what is this particular film about?
So this is the movie of a young Danny who's a huge fan of Jack Slater, a larger than life action hero. Danny has no friends, and so he spends his time at the movie theater watching Jack Slater movies. And a new one's about to come out, and the guy that runs movie theater gives him a magic ticket. And he goes in midnight to see the latest release of Jack Slater's movie, and he tears his ticket and then gets sucked into the film. So now that Danny is sucked into the movie, he has to convince his hero that the movie is a movie and everything that's happening in there isn't real, but then they get sucked into the real world as they go after the bad guy. The bad guy steals the ticket. They get sucked into the real world, and then they have to defeat the bad guy. You know, it's your typical action hero movie. Take down the bad guy.
Yeah. Now, a little, well, if people who haven't seen this movie, I mean, definitely, like, you know, just give a look if you haven't seen it, just for curiosity's sake. But I kind of want to focus.
You can find it on Amazon right now.
Right. But I want to focus more on kind of like the development of this movie, because I find the development of this movie is definitely more like intriguing. Okay, for instance, this is like Wikipedia. So, all right. So, Last Action Hero, was originally screen. The original screenplay was by Zach Penn, and his name is Adam Liff. It was meant to be a parody, typical action film screenplay of Shane Black. Now, Shane Black bust into Hollywood. He is still an actual screenwriter who bust into Hollywood with the Lethal Weapon screenplay. So that just brought, that was like, he arrived. He wrote the quintessential 80s buddy cop movie, Lethal Weapon. And so pretty much that's the blueprint of Last Action Hero's, like, parody. Yeah, it's a parody. Parody of Shane Black's blueprint of what he brought to Hollywood in the form of an action buddy comedy.
There is even a scene in the movie that sort of does a nod to Lethal Weapon. There's a cop that yells 2 days to retirement right before he gets blown up, and then like the Lethal Weapon theme plays. Yeah,
that saxophone kicks in. That was pretty funny. Yeah, but ironically, Shane Black was brought on to Last Action Hero, this particular movie, to rewrite the script. Yeah, it's like, okay, so you brought in the person that you know, that's the subject of the parody to write the movie. Yeah, that was weird. And also, did you know that there were several script doctors uncredited for this particular movie, which included Larry Ferguson, William Goldman, and Carrie Princess Leia Fisher.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that doesn't surprise me it had all those people helping. I feel like I saw this in 93, and then I watched it again today. Mm-hmm. And there is a reason for that.
it's very interesting. The more I dive into the production of this movie, the more I'm like, wow, like this is kind of like a what not to do when you're making a big budget, you know, Hollywood action film.
I feel like anytime you're working on a creative project, when you start having more and more creative voices in there, more cooks in the kitchen, as we like to say, you're going to end up with a product that is not focused. And this didn't feel necessarily focused.
Yeah. I mean, it was two movies, and it should have stuck with one. Like you were saying, you know, when he goes into the movies, you know, that's where like the energy of the film kicks in, you know, and that's where all the humor, all of, you know, the nods at, you know, the action tropes and things like that, that, you know, that's when you really have fun with the movie. Is when, and I found this after rewatching it, and I can't really understand why, when they come back to the real world, like that's what it feels very like disjointed. It feels like another movie. It don't really feel like, you know, the first half of the movie. And I know it's still the same movie, but I know it was like a huge tonal shift, and I don't know. It was just a weird, jarring, you know, like shift from them being in the movie and them being out of the movie. I mean, I get why, but I don't know. They should have did a little bit more with them being outside of the movies.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't put my finger on it today, what I didn't like about it. Okay, I just ruined my rating, but I couldn't put my finger on it, on what I didn't like. I kept blaming the little boy, Danny, who's played by Austin something or other.
Austin O'Brien.
He felt very two-dimensional to me, and so I was blaming him for the entire film, but what you're saying about it just kept, like, every scene felt, it was just so jarring. There was no fluidity to the entire movie. Mm. I think that's what was really bothering me.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's kind of like, if you're going to have a movie where there are two worlds, make it work tonally. Just like, okay, I know this is a totally different movie, but example, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, right? It's like, you know, when Eddie Valiant, you know, have to go into Toontown, like the momentum of the movie is still intact. It's not like it slows down. It's not like it's like, oh, this feels different. This movie feels different now. It's just like the energy is still going, even though we're in Toontown. You know,
right.
Yeah.
Same thing with The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
I mean, the energy before she gets to Oz and once she's in Oz, it's the same energy.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like this movie, The Last Action Hero, like kind of streaks to almost a halt once they get back to New York. You know, like there isn't nothing really there to keep the momentum. It's like it's like a stop. It's like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, is like talking to like Danny's mom. It's like, oh, I just talked. I never talked to a woman. Just like, you know, it's nice. What is that? Mozart? Oh, I think I like Mozart. It's just like, okay, I get why they did it. I get why, you know, they had to, because Jack Slater, in essence, is just pure action. Like, he, like, shoot first, ask questions later. You know, he crashed through buildings. You know, he do all this stuff. Like, because he's written to just do action stuff. I get the juxtaposition. I get what they were going for. Like, he actually, like, appreciating non-action stuff, which is cool. Like, I got it. But, I mean, I just wish it was, they didn't sacrifice the momentum of the movie just to have those scenes where Arnold Schwarzenegger is like just being a regular guy. He's not written to be a regular guy in the movies. He's written to just blow shit up. So yeah, I don't know. And for it to be Shane Black that rewrote it, it was even more of a head scratcher. It's like, dude, like, this is your blueprint, dude. Like, do something with it. Like this is your playground. This is your wheelhouse. This is your sandbox. Like, you know, do something crazy with it. Yeah. I don't know.
Right. And, I mean, yes, Arnold Schwarzenegger does a lot of action movies. But, I mean, 5 years before this, he did Twins. That's not an action movie.
No, definitely not. Kindergarten Cop.
Well, then,
that wasn't action. That was a comedy.
I mean, it's not action, but I mean, he plays a cop, so he takes down the bad guy.
Yeah, but you know, but he deals with kids more than shooting people in that movie.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah, it's not
it gets a comedy action.
Yeah, it's not a Duma. It's not a Duma. It's not. So I mean, inside the movie, however, like, I definitely appreciated more of the inside jokes, and there was a lot of them. I actually caught a few more, you know, inside jokes when they're actually in the movie that I didn't catch before. And I thought, oh, okay, that's pretty clever. And I just wish the plot within the movie plot itself was a little more interesting. Because, you know, the whole Leo the Fart thing, and they were going to, like, sabotage that, you know, blow up the Italian mob family and all that stuff. I was like, okay, this, all right, that's kind of, that's a standard cheesy, like, but I don't know, like, it could have been a better plot. Like, within the action movie they were in quotes.
Yeah. Agreed.
The action set pieces were good. I did like the action that they were, you know, it was good action.
Yeah, there's good action sequences, but I do feel that they could have done so much more with the idea of this movie, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the movie's not without, you know, entertaining segments, because there are some pretty entertaining segments. And also, I just is a little bit. So actually, Arnold Schwarzenegger had to, like, phone in, you know, favors from his old co-stars for those cameos, which I thought was really good. I was like, okay, that was really cool when Danny was walking to the police and you see Sharon Stone kind of lighting a cigarette for a hot second. Then you see Robert Patrick's T-1000 kind of zipping past the frame. It's like a blink and you miss. I'm like, okay, I like that. It wasn't putting too much attention to the cameos. Just like, oh yeah, Sharon Stone's right here. Oh, Robert Patrick's right here. Oh, okay. And that's why he was turning around like, oh, hey, that's, you know, and kind of like how we, well, me to us, the audience, like, that's, wait a minute, hold on, that's Sharon Stone. Like, and it's cool that it had her in that, her basic instinct get up. That was pretty dope.
Yes, it was nice that he was able to get his quote unquote friends to do the movie.
I wonder how much they had to, like, charge for it. I'm sure it was maybe like 3 hours for those cameras, like, especially Sharon Stone, because she just had to, like, stand outside and light a cigarette.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say that in the trivia, but you know, maybe they were just doing it at the SAG rate. You never know.
$10,000. Yeah, and another cool thing, another blinking you miss is, like, freaking Tina Turner is in here. I was like, oh,
she is? When?
Exactly. Okay, it's the beginning in the movie. You know, like, and you know, right when Jack Slater, like, pulls up at night, and the axe welding baddie is on the roof with the kids. You know, Jack Slater pulls up, right? He gets out, and you know, and Tina Turner kind of runs up to him. He's like, "Oh, hey, Jack, here's the commissioner."
I was scraping paint off a wall at that point in time.
Yeah, well, yeah, she said. I mean, she was in there for maybe like a good, like, you know, 20 seconds, but when I watched it again, I'm like, holy crap, Tina Turner's in here. So
I'll go back and look at the first 20 seconds.
Yeah, I think it's like the first minute and a half of the movie. Yeah, so very interesting. I mean, you know, looking at film and, like, how film is made, which really, you know, gives me a blast, like, kind of seeing how the stew is made. Like, this particular one is very, very interesting. So, yeah, so it was when it opened, you know, it opened modest returns, but it didn't flop, but I think it just broke even, but it didn't really make a profit. And
well, Schwarzenegger thought that this would be the end of his career because it was his first movie that didn't dominate.
Yeah, well, I say, you know, never go against Spielberg. I mean, that should be, like, everyone's kind of mantra. Don't go up against Spielberg. You'll be okay. Don't assume that. Hell, you know, we're okay. We don't have to worry about him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I always thought, and I thought this would have been an interesting, you know, turnaround far as the plot is, like, what if they actually stayed in the movie, never left the movie, and, like, the real world was crashing in on the fantasy? Yeah, like, I think that probably, that would have been more intriguing. It's like, okay, so the imagination is threatened. Like, the escapism right. is under attack kind of thing, you know.
I think I would enjoy that more than what I watched.
Yeah, so I don't know. And it was a lot of missed opportunities with this one. But you know, it's still Schwarzenegger doing his thing.
Right. So you picked this movie. Why did you pick this movie?
Because I haven't seen it in a while. It's been honestly, and plus I was like, oh, I saw Last Action Hero. I'm like, oh, okay, well, let me rewatch that. I haven't seen that in a while. Like, you know. Now, rewatching it, there are some things that there are more humor in the movie I caught that I like. And like I said, but being in filmmaking mode and watching it, like, and reading behind the scenes, I can see why some things fell by the wayside as far as the film. And when you watch it, it's like, yeah, I see that. Yeah. Yeah. I can understand now. Yeah. But yeah, it was, you know, I mean, glad I rewatched it. It's like, okay, it's a rewatch. You know, it's 2 hours. Actually, I think Roger Ebert. Now they did a screening. I think Roger Ebert said it was 10 minutes too long and they should cut it.
Yeah, it was 2 hours and 10 minutes. And I agree with that assessment. It didn't need to be 2 hours and 10 minutes. Come on.
No, I mean, they could have cut 10 minutes of the New York third act. I mean, yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. And a little bit of the opening, not opening, but, you know, counting down to Danny Gilt going back to the theater for the screening. I thought that section dragged on a little bit, and like him getting robbed and him in the police station. I was like,
you could have cut all of that out.
Yeah. It's like, why he couldn't just go straight to the, you know, theater? Why you have to be broken into and robbed and going to the police station and stuff? Like, I don't know. Now, oh, let me ask you this. Now, where were they? You know, which borough they were in?
They're in Manhattan. It was Times Square.
So is that grimy and like bad in Times Square that they break into your place and rob you and handcuff you into the bathroom?
I think in the late 80s, yes.
Early 90s?
Early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. I want to say Disney moved into, like, Giuliani and Disney started cleaning up New York in the late 90s. So up until then, yeah, Times Square was a pretty sketchy neighborhood.
Gotcha. I just wondering. I was like, wait a minute, aren't they in like the better area in New York?
Yeah.
All right.
And they may have been over like his apartment, and the movie theater may have been over in like near Alphabet City. Because I feel like there's a theater similar to what they were showing in that area.
Okay.
But not, I didn't pay that much attention. But so Alphabet City, even when I moved to New York in like 99, was still, you know, when you went over to Avenue C, you didn't necessarily want to walk around by yourself intoxicated.
Right on. Point taken.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I had friends that were mugged in that neighborhood in the late 90s, early 2000s. So, you know.
Okay. So, in that instance, the movie was pretty...
It was accurate. I would say that they definitely captured the New York energy of the late 80s, 90s, of the grittiness of the area.
Yeah. And basically, and off of that, there were a few funny lines in New York from Charles Dance's character. Now, we have to give him props because he knew what kind of movie he was in, and he was eating up every scene. He was
He was just having fun. I mean, I went to high school with a kid that had a glass eye. And when I saw this movie, because this movie came out after I was in high school, I was like, oh, he would have loved this movie if it had come, like, just to have all of those.
Nice.
Yeah.
It had like a bullseye.
Yeah, the bad guy has one fake eye, and so he keeps replacing his fake eye with different glass eyes that have different images on it. One time, one of them is a bomb that he leaves as a booby trap. But yeah,
and one is like a bullseye target or on his eye.
Yeah, a smiley face. Yeah, he was having so much fun with that.
Yeah, and when he was in the real world, like, he noticed that, hey, there's something called mortality here. And when people die, they actually die. So he shoots someone and he shoots someone. He look at his clock. He looks around and he yells, "I shot someone." And they're like, "I shot somebody and I want to confess." And then someone out the window like, "Hey, shut up down there." You know, it's like, I found that scene pretty damn funny. I mean, there was some really funny moments in here. I got to admit, because that scene was pretty hilarious. Because I guess it's right.
So that scene reminds me of, so not of a movie, of real life, but there was a woman that was attacked, I think, up in New York somewhere. And she was screaming for help and none of her neighbors came out to help her. She ended up being murdered. Oh. And it, basically, it's one of the reasons for the 911 system being introduced, was that it allows people to quickly help someone without actually being involved. So it was, you know, horrible situation, but a nice result of it.
Yeah, that's some good came out of something terrible.
Right, but the movie definitely showed that when you have a bunch of people that don't have to take responsibility, bad things can happen.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and the bad guy realized that, and he's like, oh, this is my new playground here. This is awesome. And I will give him props on his plot, his real-world plot, which was to use the ticket and bring villains from other movies into the real world. I was like, I kind of like that. Like, that was pretty cool. I just wish they would have, like, had some more engaging to that point. Yeah, because he was like, hey, you know, I can bring in Freddy Krueger, you know, while we all have a party for Rosemary's Baby. I was like, that's pretty cool.
The things that they could have done with that would have been amazing.
Yeah. Oh, what if it was like an in-game situation, right? Like, all of the villains from movies are like kind of, you know, like in front of Jack Slater and he's alone. He's like, oh, crap. And then he hears something. Maybe he hears something on his left. So he's like, welcome to the party, pal. And then John McClane comes in like right next to him. And then, like, you know, Bertrand Riggs come in. And then, like, Keanu Reeves, either Point Break or Speed, whichever cop he portrayed, he comes in. And like, it'd be like a standoff for all the villains and all of the action stars. That would be pretty cool. Anyway, that's another script, I guess.
I mean, that would have been a fun, yes.
But that movie would have cost like $500 million.
Probably, yes.
Yeah, pretty much, but it is what it is. All right, so our rating system go as final. Our quarantine rating system goes. As on the couch, good watch. You know, you like it. It's worth, you know, 2+ hours. Putting shoes on, contemplating going outside is meh. I probably watch something else. It's not the worst. It's not the best. Going outside, meaning I will go out, brave corona, earthquakes, police brutality, whatever, before I sit down and watch this movie. So is it a go out for you? A complete go out?
For me, it was is the complete go outside. I'd rather go march and stand with Black Lives Matter and be beat up by the cops than watch this movie. However, it is a PG-13 movie that your kids maybe not have not seen. So maybe if I had kids and wanted to put something on that I would find amusement in, maybe put my shoes on.
Gotcha.
But if I'm just watching it by myself, it is protesting Black Lives Matter.
Gotcha. All right. So now you put me on the spot. Because if I put my shoes on, that doesn't mean I don't want to go out and protest. It's just that I might go out and protest after I maybe watch this movie. Okay. Only because of Charles Dance's performance and some of the humor, I can't like just outright dismiss it. I gotta put a shoes on. I gotta put a shoes on. I mean, it'll be a while before I watch it, but I can appreciate some of the things they actually had in this movie that I got some chuckles out of, and some of the action sequences I was like, okay, all right, not bad. You know, so it wasn't the worst for me. It wasn't the worst viewing, but I will rather watch Terminator, another one of Schwarzenegger's movies, than before I watch this.
Yes.
So there you have it, guys. Last Action Hero. And thanks for listening to our first of the last month. We're going to have another one lined up for you come Thursday. All right. So Thursday, we wish everyone safe physical distancing. And
wear your mask and wash your hands.
Yes. Peace.